Welcome to High Strangeness, where we ask questions and explore all that is strange and unexpected in our reality.
One. Hey there, welcome to High Strangeness. My name is Tony, and today we're going to take a look at some really cool stuff. All of you, you know that what we do on this podcast is we talk about all the things that are strange, weird, or unexpected in our reality. Today we're going to focus a little bit on something that isn't necessarily strange or weird, which is hiking and exploring, but more so the things that you could experience when you go hiking and when you explore. Now, with me today, I'm lucky to have a great guest here, is also a good friend. He is Brett Hook, who actually lives here in Utah, and he, by profession, is a project manager, and as a hobbyist, he likes to play sports, continues to play sports himself, and also is somebody who gets out there and hikes and explores in all kinds of places everywhere he gets a chance to. He also likes to dabble in ghost hunting here and there as well. So welcome, Brett. Glad to have you on board. Well,
thank you. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, for our audience, just so they know, I'm going to start off, before we get to some of your cool experiences, I just want to talk a little bit about you and then just some of the things that are inherent with hiking and exploring, so that those people out there who may have an interest in this or just wonder what goes into getting those amazing pictures and getting out there to explore, like what are the things that it takes to get you to the point where you're out there and doing it. So I'm going to start off first by, you know, asking you if you could tell us just a little bit about you as a person, like what gets you to the point where you're out there doing this sort of thing as a hobby?
Yeah, so I'm somebody who is very active. I enjoy being outdoors. You know, as a kid growing up, I was involved in all different types of sports and those sorts of things. And back when I used to live in the old great state of Kansas, I had knee surgery from an injury I suffered from basketball. So it was hard for me because I still wanted to be active, but now I'm limited because I had to wait for my knee to heal and that sort of thing. So I was trying to find a new activity I could do or play or whatever. And then that turned into biking or cycling. So cycling is an adrenaline rush. When you're going down hills at who knows what kind of speeds, but then going uphill is obviously a lot more challenging unless you have one of those electric bike types of things. So when I moved back to Utah, that's what one of my main activities was. But I didn't really know. I always enjoy nature, but I didn't explore much of it myself. Just the simple things that any person or family would do as a family type of thing. Picnics, walks, stuff that was easy. So I would bike, and then one day it hit me. I'm like, you know, it would be really cool to just be able to go places where my bike cannot go. And I do realize that there are biking trails in the mountains, but the type of bike I have, the tire is a little too thin for that. So I said to myself, you know what? There's a waterfall. Let's go experience that. Let's go experience a waterfall hike. It was short, simple. It was at a place called Bridalville Falls. It's a pretty common place for people to go with their families, with people with all sorts of abilities. And so because there's a nice paved trail right down below, but in order to get up to the trail, there's like a side hike that you can go up. And it's pretty steep. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give this a try. And from that moment on, when I did it and I reached the falls, I fell in love and I understood why people love to do those sorts of things. So as time went on, my curiosity and not just hiking and exploring came into play, because I'm a type of person that I will hike, but I want to hike with a purpose. I don't just want to walk somewhere just to walk somewhere. Like, I want there to be an end goal. I want there to be a pretty view, a pretty waterfall, a pretty whatever it is. But I also enjoy going into abandoned buildings, mines, caves, anything that's different and unique, rock formations. That's the type of stuff that calls my attention. And I've been doing this for a little over 4 years now. And that's really what gets me going.
That's exciting. So 4 years you've been doing this. I know I've known you for close to that. And I remember you telling me about some of these trips that you were going. And I was really, it was amazing. Just like hearing about them. I'm not a real big outdoors person. So I kind of lived through your words and your experiences. And it was really cool when you shared some of those pictures and stuff. Let me ask you, when you decide on where you're going to go for some of these trips and these explorations, what are the steps you take to even identify the places you might go to? Or do you just find things as you're out and about?
So that's a great question. It's honestly a little bit of all of that. So through social media, like Instagram, for example, you can see other people and where they have gone and what they have posted. And there has been a few occasions that I've sent somebody a direct message to ask them whereabouts XYZ location is. But typically the two approaches that I do are these things. One you kind of mentioned. So there's, I'm sure there's more than one app out there, but there's an app out there called the All Trails app. You can pay for it and or it's free. I mean, it's entirely up to you. If you pay for it, I think you get access to like to download maps, something along those lines. So what I've done in the past is I have driven to just a location, and usually that location is going to be 1, 2, 3 hours away from my house. And then I'll pull up the map of that area and I'll see what is available. So that's one way of doing it for sure. But another way that I think is more effective is, say, for example, if you wanted to go hike a waterfall hike, you'd go into Google or one of those search engines and you'd put in like waterfalls of Utah. It would come back with multiple options and multiple pages. And one of those pages is going to be the All Trails. So you click on that and then it opens the app on your phone. And now the app is specifically telling you all the waterfalls of Utah. And that's that's really how I find a lot of these different types of places. I thrive on being willing and able to go to places that tourists don't go, nor locals go. I want to be somebody who is sharing places where people are in, not necessarily just awe, but they're kind of super intrigued and curious of where these places are. The last thing I would ever want to do is share something that any and everyone else does, not to say that I haven't, but that's not my goal. My goal is to go places that honestly haven't been shown that often so that others can see it, either live vicariously through it or try to do it themselves, or wherever they live, go and explore with their own version of whatever that is.
No, I think that's great. And I will ask you right here on the show that if you ever come up with, you ever put this stuff out there electronically, or you do a, some kind of a blog post or something that you're continually sharing that stuff, I definitely would like to have that so I can share it with the audience.
Sure.
And they could follow you that way as well. So you had mentioned an app, and I'm curious, that sounds like really an amazing tool to use that pretty much anybody can utilize it in some way. Is it interactive enough that, like, if you go there and let's say you're going to look at a site and something is off or different about it, do you have the ability to give feedback to the app and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So ironically, and I'll be the first to admit, I should probably honestly be one of those people that is consistently providing input, but I usually rely on others to do that for me. So within the app itself, people can post pictures. People can post pictures, but more importantly, you can see all the specifications to it. It will tell you the elevation. It'll tell you the distance. It will rank it, whether it's easy, moderate, hard. I think I mentioned elevation. It pulls off of like a GPS thing. So even though when you lose your service, your cell phone service, because the vast majority of these places, you're not going to have cell service. You will still have access to it. I mean, my suggestion is, so when you go into the app, you want to pull up the map right away, because then you'll see where you are in connection to where the trail is. Because there has been multiple times in my adventures that I have gone the wrong way, because unfortunately, there's not a lot of signs out there that say go right or go left. You'll run into a fork in the road, you're not quite sure where to go, and that app has been vital with letting you know where exactly you are. But towards the bottom of it, this is very, very informative stuff that people put in there, but they will tell you exactly what their opinion is of the trail. And it's not necessarily just the trail, it's getting to the trail. So somebody like me, I don't have an off-road vehicle. I don't have a huge truck. I just have a typical commuter car, which is a Prius, right? And I think most people realize that Priuses are pretty low to the ground. Well, why would that matter? Well, if I'm going to go on a trail and the road is really rough, I may not even attempt it because I know my car is not going to be able to handle that. So why would I want to drive 4 hours to, say, Wyoming, for example, to go somewhere and then realize, well, you know, there's not a lot that I can do. And or I can just plan that and I can say, well, I'm going to have to tack on this additional mileage to the trail if I want to go to said location. So I personally, I feel like that trail without that app, I think exploring would be a lot more difficult. Now, it's going to tell you of hikes. It's not going to necessarily tell you like, oh, there's a unique viewpoint or there's stuff like that. It's only going to tell you the trail. So just keep that in mind. Oh, like yeah. Down in central Utah, there's a town called Hinksville. Hinksville has a lot of beautiful rock formations. And a lot of people on social media will go there and they'll share images and shots of themselves. But those I wouldn't necessarily say are hikes. So you're going to have a hard time of finding those locations on an app like that. You'd probably have a better shot at just Googling that to find out where that location is.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I mean, I love the fact, I didn't even know there was an app out there like that that would do that for people. It really does open the door for all different levels of hikers and you know, you could bring your family out there without worrying too much about how difficult it's going to be, as long as you do a little research through the app.
Oh, 100%. So one of the advantages with the app is this. So this is pretty typical where other bloggers will go, and you'll put in, we'll just use Utah in this example, waterfall hikes of Utah. And then you'll go there. You could look at 5, 10, 15 different pages. Then you're going to come to the conclusion that there's only 20 to 30 waterfalls in the entire state. And there's not. There's a lot more than that. But you're not going to find those places in necessarily those blogs. A lot of them you will, but not all of them. It's by using the examples that I just gave of waterfall hikes in Utah, where it connects to the All Trails app, and that's how you can find those places.
That's pretty cool. Let me ask you about safety. You know, there's people that have issues, accidents and stuff like that, that maybe aren't ready sometimes to go on some of these hikes and things. I mean, we hear it on the news all the time where somebody takes a fall or even goes missing. What sort of safety measures, if any, do you use or consider before you determine, oh, this is a hike that I think I want to take, or, hey, you know, I need to prepare specifically for this one? Like, what do you do?
So to answer that, it's kind of a broad answer. It's kind of a situational answer. I hike 95% of the time by myself. And I think you need to know where you are at physically and mentally in order to attempt certain places. I'm pretty brave, I would definitely say, but I'll be honest, there are some places where I'm like, yeah, no, it's probably not smart to go there by yourself. So I guess what I'm trying to get at, going in pairs in general is always the best safety thing, because you never know what could happen. You could be walking down the trail and trip on a rock and then fall and hit your head. If you're by yourself, you might be kind of up the creek type of thing. But if you're with somebody, you have that ability. You want to make sure that you have the right shoes. ideally you don't want to wear just like tennis shoes, whether they're an expensive hiking shoe, hiking boot, or whatever. You just want to make sure that you have traction, because when you're walking on all these rocks are very different. The there's a word for it, but the grippiness of your shoe. Some are very slippery and some are not. Like, for example, there's a place in Arizona called Natural Bridges, Tonto Nash Na Natural Bridges State Park, I think it's called. I don't know how, I don't know what shoe could work in a place like that. It's like the rocks have some kind of have some kind of wax on them, and they are, that by far was the most slippery rock I've ever been on. And they're not wet. It's just some kind of something is on those rocks where it's super slippery. But for the most part, they are, if you have the right traction, you'd be fine. For people that really go out there, and they're people that climb peaks, I would definitely suggest getting some kind of a GPS unit just to have with you, just in case. Again, it just depends on how far off the grid you're going and if you're by yourself or whatever, because you never know, things like that can happen. But the types of things that I bring with me for protection, because yes, falls and that kind of stuff can happen, but you also have to plan for people. You have to plan for wildlife. You just never know. Even when you're alone, there could be a threat out there and you just don't realize it. So I have brought my revolver out there. I don't necessarily like to take it because it adds weight to my pack and it just makes it heavier. I've never needed to use it in any way, shape, or form. So mainly the two things that I bring for protection is, one, my walking stick. And this is a walking stick that I found out in nature. I didn't purchase it or whatever, but there are ones that you can purchase. Heck, there's some that you can purchase that at the end of them, they're their own weapons, that they're metal, they can turn into a spear, they can turn into a fishing pole. I mean, some people out there have are clever with coming up with not, I guess you could say devices or whatever you want to call them. But anyways, back to your question. So I would say number one is my stick. That can help fend off somebody. But more out of not, that helps with knowing like how much snow is there. Is that ice thick? It helps you with leverage when you're climbing up. And the other thing I bring with me, and I would suggest this, and for people that are not exactly want to be walking around with a gun or something like that, is bear spray. My opinion is, if it can stop and take down a bear, it can stop and take down a moose, a cougar, a lion, anything like that. And I have sprayed that over the course of time to like use as like a demonstration of people. And there's been a couple instances where some of it has blown back my way. And I can tell you, nothing is going to want that on their body and their face and their mouth or anything like that. I mean,
I bet.
it's like a weird poison.
Well, this kind of leads me to something that was coming up in my mind here as we were talking, which is, I know you've got some stories we're going to talk about a little later, but so not those, but have you found yourself in a weird or difficult situation while you were out on any of these hikes and exploring, where you were like, oh boy, I'm in a kind of a tough situation. Could you share something like that if you remember anything?
One example where, you never know what you can do until your adrenaline and panic sets in. And there's a place in St. George, Utah, and it's called the Lava Flow Tubes. So essentially, way back in the day, millions of years ago, whatever, there was volcanoes, lava, that sort of thing, that has formed like these crevices within the ground. And the rock is like molten, it's like black and it's super sharp. And let's just say you wouldn't want to fall in that type of thing. But these flow tubes are kind of like caves that you can explore. Well, if you feel like anxiety and anxious and being anxious with things that are kind of close to you, claustrophobic or whatever, I would not suggest going into a place like that or into a cave or something like that, into a mine, because you're going to probably panic. And down there, I got, it's hard to explain. I got down there. There were other people down there. I didn't know them, but I was like, oh, they can do it. I can do it. Right. But sometimes you got to realize, you know, your age, your ability, your weight, how tall you are. Other things need to factor into that. Don't just follow people that are half your age down into a place like that. And then, so when we got down there, I got down from like a ledge type of thing. But when I was coming back, there was no easy way of getting up. And I tried to put my foot on the rocks to use for leverage, and they were slipping. And I was starting to panic because I'm like, how am I going to get out of here? There's no cell phone service. No one knows that I'm here. But I would say it was honestly just willpower that I just said, you know, the heck with it. And I was able to pull myself up somehow, and here I am today. So obviously it worked.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, as you're talking about this, I'm wondering, like, okay, because like you mentioned, you may be aware of somewhere, obviously it'd be difficult to get all the details from any specific hike or location. Have you ever found yourself in a place where you're there, you've seen something that was, you know, like maybe just part of the terrain that is a little unexpected, and you're saying to yourself, okay, this is unfamiliar, I could lose my way. How do you navigate through that? Do you have a process for that, or do you just say, no, that's unwise for me to go there?
I mean, I think you could say you got to trust your gut or intuition. And honestly, that app that I mentioned, the All Trails app, that is going to be your savior. Unless you have an actual physical map or something like that, if you want something easy to go, I would suggest something like that. So what happens sometimes is when you, because most of the trails I go on, they're all brand new to me. I typically do not go back to the same trail twice, unless it's a different season, a fall, winter, something like that. Maybe then I'll go back. But I want something new. I don't want to be exploring the same trek over and over again.
Yeah.
So, but then after you go and you experience it, then you can say that you are familiar and you know that trail, but not when you first go. So what happens sometimes is with guessing and being like, I don't know, I feel uneasy or whatever, and you go XYZ location, it can be wrong, and it has been wrong for me in some occasions. And then I start walking, and then something tells me, check the app. And then I check the app, and it's like, whoa, I am way off course. Like, if I continued walking, who knows where I would have went. I would have definitely been in unfamiliar terrain, because the pictures that people posted, I kind of have an idea of what I'm getting myself into. But if I take the wrong path and I just continue, who knows what I'm going to find.
So part of what I hear you saying, I mean, not directly, but you should not be the type of person who puts a pair of earphones on with music and just goes and isn't aware or alert or listening to their gut because they're listening to, you know, their favorite album or something like that.
Well, yeah, so that's a great. So I will be that person too. I will be that person that does listen to my headphones and that sort of thing. But my advice is trust your gut. If something doesn't feel right, turn off the music. Because one of these stories that I'm going to share here in a bit is, if I would have turned off the music, I wouldn't have been in the situation which I was in. So it's a lot of it, especially the first time, you know, in the beginning. So typically when I'm out there, and I'm going, when I go, as I'm going up, I won't listen to my music to kind of get familiar with my surroundings. Then once I kind of have a good idea and I feel comfortable, I will put on the headphones. Again, it's whatever your intuition tells you. But to your point, I wouldn't start the trail, especially if you've never been there, or even if you have been there, and 100% just be listening to the music, because you don't know what's around your surrounding area. I mean, animals or people or whatever, they're not listening to headphones. They see a distracted person that's focused and tuned on what it is that they're doing. They're going to become an easy target. So it's just good to always know what your surroundings are.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. This also makes me think a little bit about just not necessarily when I've been up in some of these mountains hiking or anything, but more or less just even traveling through some of the highways and going up there to Park City or whatever. It's amazing to me how the weather and everything can change so quickly and get pretty ferocious. Like, how do you stay up to date on weather conditions, and what concerns you, or are there, what's your approach? How do you think about that part of a day when you're going to go travel and do that?
So that kind of can depend a little bit. So the question is, so if I can drive to said location, it's different than if I have to fly to a location. Because if I have to, ideally for me, I personally love colors. I love clouds. I love blue skies. I'm not somebody that would purposely go and hike in the rain. I'm not somebody that would go purposely hike in the snow. But it has happened, and it does happen, but that's not what my goal is. And it's important to be prepared for those types of situations when you're in them. So typically what I'll do is I'll look at the weather. I'll look at the weather for the entirety of the day to kind of get an idea of what I'm getting myself into. I'll look at that app for what, if people on the app will tell you what the trail light conditions are as well, so you're getting more information. I would suggest somebody that gets serious into hiking that you have a hiking backpack. It's definitely going to be different than a school backpack. Typically, they're taller, they're longer. You're going to get more of the weight distribution throughout your back, but you can also put more things in there. You can put emergency kits, you can put ponchos, you can put gloves, whatever it is. So typically, I just assume the worst. So I just bring the stuff just in case, so I'm prepared for any situation.
Right. That makes sense. So it's interesting. Like, I'm looking at this picture right here we have, which is amazing. It looks pretty cool. And to somebody who's not out there, you know, I'm not out there doing that, just a picture like that and a location like that is really cool. Like, it's motivating to go to that location. I know you talked a little bit earlier about some of the things that motivate you, but what keeps you motivated to want to continue to do this? Because I know that you're out there pretty often year round. You're doing trips and visits, even outside of Utah. You're going different places.
Yeah. I firmly believe that living, in order to live, you have to live. In order to live, you have to get out there and explore and see new things. And that's what my drive is every location is different from another location. And it's something new, something I've never experienced. Like, for example, when people think Utah, you know, they think rocks and rock formations, and they think of arches and stuff like that. There's a place outside of Eureka. I was going to call it Eureka Springs. Maybe it's called Eureka Springs. Sorry about that. which is kind of like towards Delta, Utah, which is kind of central western part of the state. And it's a trail called Paul Bunyan's Woodpile. And you're like, well, why would it be called Paul Bunyan's Woodpile? Well, because the rocks look like wood. But the reason I bring that up is there's a really cool and pretty arch there. And I've never seen, not only have I never seen anyone there, you barely even see cars go by. So, I mean, that's just an example. Like, if I'm not willing and able to go out there and see something like that, that practically no one ever goes to, then I'm not going to be able to have that experience, because life is about experiences, good and bad. But if you don't put yourself out there, then you're never going to know.
That's great. Yeah, no, I can feel that. I can hear what you're saying. Now let's kind of transition into a little bit of the possibly strange stuff here. Have you ever had any strange wildlife encounters while hiking? Have you, and maybe you have it, but maybe you just seen some things at a distance, but is there anything you can recall where you saw something?
You know, yes. So So surprisingly, so I've been doing this for 4 years, and one of the things, I'm not really pro snake. I'm not out there looking for snakes. I'm not into snakes, rattlesnakes, nothing like that. But, surprisingly, I've only seen two of them, and I saw both of them within a week of a within a span of a week, and that was like 3 years ago. And those are always on my mind because within that app, people will post pictures of those types of things. And it's something that you have to be aware of because they camouflage. You could accidentally step on one, right? So that's a threat, but there's also other threats out there, the bigger animals. So there was this one time I was in Grand Teton National Park. Grand Teton National Park up in Wyoming is pretty close to Yellowstone, and most people will go to Yellowstone so that they can see the geysers and that they can see the wild animals and that sort of thing. So I knew that there was a chance that something was going to happen. I'm trying to remember what the trail is called. It's across from the giant lake there that I can't seem to think of what it's called. But you can take a boat across it. So maybe people know what I'm talking about. I can't think of what it's called in this moment. So it's a trail that you essentially just go up in elevation. So I went there with a couple friends, and we didn't see any animals. Supposedly there was a moose like off in the distance, but no big deal type of thing. And for them they were having a hard time because they're from Kentucky, different elevation, different environment, so they were moving a little bit slower than what I like to move. But again, a lot of this comes from experience and that sort of thing. So we reached where we were going, and then it was time to turn back. I just remember that it was a really hot day, and they're like, "You know what? Let's go put our feet in the water to cool down." And I was like, "Well, I don't want to do that, but sure, let's go to the river." There was a river through the by that trail as well. So there's a part of the river where the river would. There was like a pool of water, and then it peaked, and the river went down like that. And that's where they were sitting. That's where their feet were in the water. And I was like, "Well, I'm going to go in the pool of water because one thing that's cool about the Tetons are the jaggedy edges of their peaks are like unique. They're not your typical mountaintops. I'll just say that." So I got into the water about waist deep, and I was taking pictures of like the reflection and the shots and the angle and that sort of thing. And I was going like this, and I, was moving my back around and stuff like that. Then all of a sudden, I heard one of them say my name within like a panic, like "Brett." So I like froze, like, "What is going on?" And they're like, "Bear." And I'm like, like, okay, thanks. So they didn't say, was it mama bear? Was it daddy bear? Like, how big is this bear? Is it a baby bear? I mean, those types of things you need to know. So I turned around, and yeah, there was a bear that I would say he was probably like a teenager. And I turned, but before I turned around, I panicked and I did what you're not supposed to do, which was, run. And running in water is obviously a lot harder than running not in water, if you've ever tried to run in a pool or something like that. And so I had a weapon in my backpack, which was on the land, was with me in the water, even though you're not supposed to take pistols into national parks, but I had it just in case. So when I ran out, I turned around and I saw like it was like a younger bear, like a teenage bear. Fortunately, he probably runs across people often and he had no interest in me, but that adrenaline of fear of like, am I going to turn around? There's this ginormous grizzly, like I had no idea. So that is a time that that has happened. Another common animal threat is moose, and I haven't seen a moose. It's been a minute. It's probably been about a year and a half. But again, when I've seen them, I feel like I've seen them all within a short amount of time, within a few months of each other. But they're massive. They're definitely nothing that you would even want to. Just keep your distance.
Yeah, exactly. Well, cool. Thanks for sharing that. And yeah, I'm trying to put myself in your place as you hear that, and you're just looking for that bear.
Right.
I'm sure it was crazy. Well, okay. So now, how many interesting, strange stories are you going to share with us today? spread?
So I will share three. And within those three, don't worry. If your lovely host here, Tony, ever decides to have me back on, I'll continue to add to this and have other stories. All these stories are kind of weird. They're different. They don't make a lot of sense. And the picture that you have up right now, that's going to be the first story that I talk about.
Okay.
So this picture, this picture is of a lake called Mirror Lake. And it is in the high Uintas of Utah. To kind of give you a perspective of how high you're up there, you could be hiking in the Salt Lake County area or whatever in the month of July, and it could be 100 degrees. If you go up there, it's going to be 30, 40 degree difference. I mean, that's how high up there in elevation. And you'd want to go up there, so it's not as hot. You can cool down, that sort of thing. Mirror Lake is a place that's pretty well known. People will make the two-hour drive from Salt Lake or Utah County to go up there and to swim or to walk around. It's an easy trail. It's maybe a mile. It's just a big loop, essentially. It's really no big deal. So Mirror Lake is like a lot of other lakes and stories and folklore and stuff like that. And I haven't necessarily seen this myself, but Mirror Lake is supposedly pretty haunted. And one of the ghosts that haunts it, I kind of imagine like a spirit, like the Grudge, like the girl in that movie. Supposedly it's a younger girl that's all in white, and you'll see her sporadically throughout the lake and that sort of thing. As you go up to places like that, you're going to notice that it gets darker faster, which is true. The sun sets, seems like it sets a couple hours earlier than other places that you've been. But that's just kind of like a weird thing. That whole area, though, of the High Uintas has always been really weird. You always feel like somebody's watching you, even though no one's watching you. I have been up there, I don't know, not just Mirror Lake, but in that area. That's a picture of me standing on a rock or whatever at Mirror Lake. I mean, it's a really pretty lake. But I've probably hiked up there 8 times or so. That's been the only place that I saw a wolf. And I've told people that story. And I saw that thing for like 10 seconds. It crossed right in front of the path. I've told people that. They think I'm lying. I'm like, why would I lie? I mean, it looked like a wolf. It was by itself. It wasn't with any humans. It was a big dog type of thing. But besides that one wolf, I have never seen another animal up there. I've seen some like herding cow, but I've never seen deer. I've never seen moose. You would think a place like that would be full of wildlife because, you know, you're a couple hours away from any bigger city or anything like that, the higher you are in the elevation. But it's always just a weird, eerie feeling. But I haven't had anything too traumatic or whatever happen. But that's kind of the famous story about Mirror Lake and how that girl drowned and how she's known to be still walking around today.
Crazy. So, anybody going up there? Keep your eyes out.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome, thank you. It is beautiful. I do like it just looks like a very peaceful place.
Yeah.
If not haunted too.
Yeah.
Okay. Brett, what else? What else you got for us?
So the next story was back to when I was talking about listening to music in my headphones.
Is that this?
Yeah, that's this location. Okay. So this is Capitol Reef, Utah. This is Utah's known for the Mighty Five. This is one of the Mighty Five of the national parks. And of the national parks, I believe it's the least visited of the national parks as well, which in my opinion, I don't quite understand. I think it's probably the second coolest one of the five, but, you know, to each your own. So I remember that. So I've been to this trail twice. So keep that in mind. So I was down there in October and I was in the area, I should say, and I was really trying to like capture the foliage and the leaves changing and all that kind of stuff. And I went to this place called the Pando Forest, which is a place full of aspen trees. So I went down there and I finished and I was like, well, I still got daylight. I'm like, oh, Capitol Reef's not that far from here. Maybe I'll go over there and do a quick hike. And so I did. So I knew it was getting dark, but I still had plenty of time. I wasn't worried about that. I typically bring a headlamp with me just in case. I didn't know how much juice I had on it, but nonetheless, I brought it just in case. So I get to this trail called the Golden Cathedral, I believe it's called. And it's called that after, like, or Golden Throne. Golden Throne. There's this, and I don't have, unfortunately, I don't have a picture of it in these pictures that Tony's sharing here. But it's just a massive rock, long story short. So I get to the parking lot, and there's a lot of cars there. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, right? No big deal. So I'm like, clearly I'm going to run into other people. The trail itself wasn't that long. I think all in all it was two, three miles, if that. So I was like, okay, cool, I'm going to run across other people. And so I went on this trail. And this trail kind of, I mean, it's kind of hard to draw this, but you kind of, not switchbacks, but you're kind of like doing like loops around rocks and stuff like that to some extent. And there were steep gorges and drop-offs and that sort of thing as I was doing this. So I was walking and walking and walking, and sure enough, I was like, I don't think anyone else is on this trail. That doesn't make any sense. The parking lot had all these cars there. Like, where are the people? I mean, it didn't make any sense to me. So as I'm walking, I'm like, you know, I'm starting to get weird feelings, weird vibes, weird energy. Kind of like you're being watched, like the hills have eyes. Capitol Reef, the rocks are massive. I mean, the views and stuff like that. But I mean, anyone could easily be like looking down on you and you would never even know it type of thing. But, you know, you're kind of getting somewhat concerned. And I had headphones on and I was feeling that way. So I eventually reached the end part of the trail. And this is still weird to me because I wasn't able to capture this. You know, when I'm out there documenting whatever it is, ghost hunting or not, I try to get evidence because in order for people to believe, they want proof, which I totally understand. So I swear for a second, I heard what sounded to me, which was a Native American chant, like a with like a drum thing. But it was off in the distance somewhere. It lasted for a few seconds. And Capitol Reef does echo. So I was like, what the heck? What the heck? There's a, I guess you could call him an author. There's another person out there that does investigations and exploring and stuff like that. And Tony knows who I'm talking about. His name is David Politis, and he's known for the missing 411. So he's done a couple books, movies, one geared for hikers, one geared for hunters, and then he did one for like aliens or extraterrestrial beings, that sort of thing. And so I mentally said to myself, I'm like, whoa, now it's starting to get dark. And I'm like, I better get out of here before the missing 401 gets me. Because one of the stories behind that is people mysteriously go missing all the times in national forests, national parks, national land. And I was like jokingly saying to myself, I don't want to be one of those people. So I better get out of here. And so I was walking, no big deal, going down. And I get to the parking lot and most of the cars are gone. Most of the cars are gone. I felt my pocket and I noticed my keys were gone. And I'm like, oh, great. My keys are gone. I have no idea where they are. I don't know how much light in my headlamp I have. And now it's pretty much dark. And my options were I could walk back to the camp areas where you're looking at least 7 miles. Or I could just say, the heck with it. I'm going to go back up there and I'm going to find these keys. But keep in mind, I was feeling the heebie-jeebies when the light was out there, when the sun was still out there. And now I have to go back into a place that I'm already kind of creeped out with, where it's pitch dark. And so as I was walking, when my headlamp goes out, it starts to blink a few times and then it goes out. And I was walking and, yeah, sure enough, it started to go out. And I'm like, oh, this is great. But before it went out, I was able to find my keys, and they were literally just sitting right in the middle of the path. So back to what I was saying with, like, not having headphones in, I think what happened was I may have jumped or something, or jumped off of a rock and they fell out, but I never heard them fall. Or maybe a twig or something pulled the lanyard and I just never heard it. So I just kept going because I wasn't focused on that, because I'm like, oh, this is easy, no big deal. So as I found my keys, I was like, well, now my light's dead. And there's lots of walking like this amongst these big rocks. It's hard to explain. My pictures don't really give you justification, but I mean, in a shot like that, it kind of gives you an idea of how high up you are, and it's common to walk along that. I mean, nothing where you're going to like you're 2 feet from a cliff. It's not like that. But still, you never know what can happen. And I'm like, oh, the missing 401. I'm going to be one of those poor people. Something out here is going to get me, an animal, a ghost, an alien. I have no idea. So fortunately, there was a full moon. And what I didn't really realize is, and I don't think most people would realize this unless they're in that situation, is the light of the moon reflected on the rocks. So because of the light of the moon and the reflection on the rocks, I could see where I was walking, which was really weird. There were a couple instances where it was kind of like tucked away, where I kind of had to like go slower. Not that I was running by all means, but it was amazing how the light of the moon was able to guide me out of there. It was my ultimate flashlight, I guess you could say. Fortunately, I wasn't there. I was there in the colder, when it's a little bit cooler. So you could say to yourself, well, what about reptiles, right? Because reptiles thrive in the night. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what if they're, because that's a place that you would have rattlesnakes. What if there was a snake and I didn't even see it? But fortunately, I was there when it was colder, so I didn't really have that as a concern. And then I get back to the parking lot and I said to myself, watch, I'm going to be lucky my car's not going to start. But it did start. So that's pretty much the end of that story.
Wow. No, I could see that. Well, and just the piece where you had to go back and find your keys and you're already feeling a little freaky. It's just adds to
100%
a really crazy experience.
That anxiety, not, I wouldn't call it fear, but that hesitation of being like, oh my goodness, this just got magnified. Like, I want to get out of here. I don't want to go back up there by myself, because now I know I was by myself. So what I didn't know at the time was the reason why all those cars were parked there, because there was an easy trail on the other side of the parking lot that had petroglyphs. That's why all the people were there, was to see that. So I was under the impression some of them were going to be on the trail, but I did not see one person. So I've been on this trail twice, and the other time that I've seen that I've been on there, I saw one person. It still stayed true. It was still weird. The vibe and the energy. Something about rocks and holding energy. Whether that's a spirit.
Do you find?
Go ahead.
I was gonna say. Do you find that do you track or keep track of the ones that seem freaky like that? Do you not even worry about that?
Like the hikes or.
Yeah, like these locations, like this particular location, you had a strange feeling. Do you, other than just keeping that in your mind, do you kind of keep track of places like that?
No, it's all via pictures. So when I start going through pictures, memories start popping up in my head and I remember the certain stories and that sort of thing. You know, for the person, I fortunately have a pretty good memory. for people that don't, or whatever the issue is, maybe you'd want to like document that in another way. But it's funny how when you see a picture and you remember, then all of a sudden it's like you're back in that moment. You remember exactly everything that was going on. It's been a minute since that happened, and I can still remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you for sharing that. Now, I think I've heard a little bit about this next one, but I think it's really cool. So go right ahead.
So this is a weird story, and I'm going to make it a little bit broad. So this is outside of Colorado Springs, Colorado. There's a road called Old Gold Camp Road, and this is what I heard, but I know partially some of it's true because I witnessed it for myself. So supposedly there were three tunnels, and these are old railroad tunnels for like pushing mine carts through, from what I understand. But there's two today that you can access. That's what I'm trying to say. And I heard, I don't know if it's true, the third tunnel they closed down because there was an accident with a school bus and supposedly people died. I don't know. That's just what I heard. So that is by a pretty well-known touristy area called Helen Hunt Falls. Helen Hunt Falls is a little bit down lower than where this is. So I remember there being a bunch of switchbacks, and this is essentially on the top as high as you can go within that area, and Helen Hunt Falls is down a little bit lower. So the reason why I tie these two into the story is usually when you ask people about ghosts, you're going to get one of two reactions. One, they don't want anything to do with the question you ask or be in denial. Or two, they are very happy you asked them that question and now they're going to tell you some things. So I ran into a park ranger on those Helen Hunt Falls, and I just asked a question. I have no idea. Like, have you ever had a spiritual ghostly experience, that sort of thing here or around this area? And he told me that people were known to see dead miners, dead Native Americans all the time. Okay. How and what exactly happened? I don't know. I mean, when it comes to mining, accidents have occurred. Unfortunately, people have been hurt, lost their lives, that sort of thing. But these tunnels, if you look online, these tunnels are also known to be haunted. But again, that's right up my alley. Yeah. I'm going to be intrigued. You can go there during the day, and you can go there at night, and they're almost just as creepy either way. It doesn't really make that big of a difference. So where the parking lot is to where the first tunnel is, if you're walking down, just keep in mind, you're about a mile or so away. Well, I've been there three times, but the last time that I was there, I didn't remember that. And it would have been better to remember because, you know, you're up in a mountain. If you could be by yourself, you don't know what types of animals are up there. I remember this car drove by me once and said, "Hey, FYI, we just saw a mountain lion, and I don't have anything to defend myself with." And then I'm up there walking at night. So it's just, again, know your surroundings and just be prepared just in case. So I have a friend that's not necessarily into like ghostly stuff, but he lives in Colorado Springs, but I was able to convince him to go up there with me. So we go, but we didn't walk from the parking lot. I think we drove his car down that it was close to one of these tunnels. So these tunnels are not straight, though. They have like a curve. So when you start walking in them, as you can see how dark it is from the entry, you still can't see the end of the tunnel because it curves. So it looks dark until it no longer looks dark. And cars will drive through these. Like, it's kind of like creepy, the suspense and whatever. You don't usually see people outside their cars around there because they're probably scared in the first place. But yeah. I'm a type of person that stuff is right up my alley. So I remember we go into this tunnel, and no big deal. We walk through the tunnel. He comes out. Cool. All right. Well, do you want to go to the other tunnel? He's like, okay, let's do it. This is where the story is just weird. Like, what is going on? So we go to the second tunnel and we walk through it. and I come out, he comes out. I don't remember if it was like 30 seconds, a minute, a few minutes, whatever it was. All of a sudden, this random guy comes out of the tunnel. Now, remember what I said. You didn't really see anyone on that road walking around. They were almost always in their cars. So here we have this random guy by himself that just came out of the tunnel that seemed a little off, was friendly, but you could say maybe creepy friendly. And he was just kind of like there. We're kind of confused, like, okay, who's this guy? Where'd he come from, type of thing. So, yeah. So anyways, we're like, okay, well, our car is two tunnels back. So we know we have to go back through these tunnels. You can't go around. When you're there, it's a steep drop off. Like, I wasn't able to capture the whole thing here. I wish I would have provided more of a shot of like the views of the area, which is gorgeous, but still there's no way around there. You got to go back through those tunnels. And so we're like, all right. And the guy goes to us, he goes, you guys going to go back in? And it's kind of creepy. It's like, yeah, why would we not go back? And he's like, okay, I'll go with you guys. And my friend was more creeped out by it than I was. I give people the benefit of the doubt. It's like I mentioned I've been there a few times. One of the times I had went there, there's these two guys from Texas that asked me if I wanted to go with them. And I said, yes. And I don't know who these guys are. They could be serial killers. Like I said, sometimes I just give people the benefit of the doubt. I'm like, sure. I mean, I'm a big guy, but still, you know, things can happen. So back to that story. So he says, are we going to go in? And my buddy's like, yeah. So I go first. And my buddy said to this guy, he goes, you go behind him. Because he didn't want that person to be behind us in case he was going to do something or whatever. So yeah. The guy's like, cool, whatever. So I went first, he went second, and then my buddy went third. So I go, and I walk out of the tunnel, and I'm like, well, that's weird. That guy didn't walk out, and my buddy didn't walk out yet. And then my buddy walked out, and I was like, where'd that guy go? So as this is going on, a car went through the tunnel. So you can see the reflection of their lights in the tunnel. Yeah. And that guy was not in the tunnel. So I have no idea where he went, who he was, what he was. Was he a ghost? Maybe. I honestly have no idea. He wasn't like a minor or anybody like that. Like, he looked like just like an average guy type of thing. Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, touching on spirits and ghosts and stuff like that. They say that we see ghosts all the time, but we're just so busy, we don't realize it. Like, we're busy with whatever it is that we're doing, and we stay focused on that. We don't acknowledge them. And I'm not saying that this person was or isn't, because we actually talked to this person. Not that you can't supposedly talk to ghosts and they talk back. But it's just a mystery of where did that guy go? Because we were both kind of dumbfounded. We're like, all right. And I think we waited there for a couple of minutes, just in case he didn't come out with like machetes or something. And he didn't. And we kept walking up there, and I have no idea where that person went.
That is freaky.
Yeah.
It'd be worse if it was at night. So I'm glad at least it was.
100%. And it was at night. So, I mean,
it was at night.
So those tunnels were even darker because, you know, obviously in a picture like that, you can see how dark it is. But when you come out, it's just as dark. So,
my goodness. Yeah, that makes me wonder what that really was. You know, I mean, he's in between you. It's not like he fell behind. Right. He would have, your friend behind you, and behind him would have noticed.
Right. And
wow.
Being dark in those tunnels. I mean, they're pitch dark, and we didn't have headlamps. We didn't have any light. We just were like, you can see how wide it is. A car can fit in. We just knew, just walk and you'll be fine. It's nothing where you're like, I can't see, I have to feel for things. No, it wasn't like that.
Yeah. Wow. Great stories. I love it. So people, see, I mean, you can have some pretty amazing experiences. You go to hike and explore, but you get these extra little things happening from time to time.
Absolutely.
I do know I do know, Brett, that as you continue to do this, because this is an ongoing thing for you, I'd love to be able to hear about some of your future or additional experiences that you have that you've, compile and experience. Maybe have you back every once in a while to chat about some of that stuff. It would be
Oh,
great.
absolutely. And, just like new adventures, you look forward to new things that you haven't even seen. Like something could happen this weekend that I haven't foreseen. I don't know. I guess we'll go and find out.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You've kind of given a lot of good advice throughout this whole podcast, but what would you give someone as advice if they are really considering, I think I want to go out and do a little exploring? You've given, some tools, you've given mindset and stuff like that. Any additional stuff you'd share?
So I guess at some point you just have to start and you just have to go. My suggestion is take it slow and easy. Do easy hikes to start to get out there, because what's going to happen is when you start getting out there and start getting more active, and this is true for anybody on any situation, whether how big, small, or whatever you are, once you start to get going, you're going to start feeling better. You're going to start breathing better. You're not going to be as sick as often. And I firmly don't believe, I believe that's true. So you start to get out there and you start to explore. I would say slowly start increasing elevation. It's hard because if you live in a place like Kansas where the elevation is probably as high as the Landfill Hill versus a place like Utah, it's a huge difference of elevation. It's like when I was in South Carolina, I was looking at these trails and it said elevation 9 feet. I'm like, 9 feet, you gotta watch out for that. But for the purpose of this, let's just say that it's a place that's hilly or there's mountains or whatever. Slow and steady wins the race. So just get out there. That's the most important thing. Get out there, you, yourself, your family, whoever. Start seeing the beauty and start realizing, well, the more you do this, you can see and be in incredible places. And that's not necessarily just true in this country. That's true in any country. Whether it's deserts or rainforests or glaciers or whatever it is, there's beauty throughout this world, but you're never going to be able to experience it unless you're willing to get out there.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Look, I've enjoyed this, and I always enjoy hearing some of these stories. So thank you for coming on the show today and sharing this so other people can really get the feel for how much fun this
Oh,
is and
absolutely. I
really such a neat experience.
absolutely. I mean, I love talking about this because as much as I like when people live vicariously through me, I would rather them go experience it themselves with wherever they live and however they want to do it, because that is the best form of being happy and healthy and that sort of thing. It's always going to be rewarding. And you got to remember, I said this started a little more than 4 years ago. Well, what went on about 4 years ago? It was the start of COVID. It was the start of people being isolated and not being able to do much and go to gyms and go into places, and they felt locked down and that sort of thing. And I can honestly tell you, I never felt that way because my playground is not those places. My playground is places like that.
What do you have planned going for? Is there anything new, special, any special hikes, or do you have this one location that you are eyeing and saying, I'm going to go there to explore this place? Is there anything on your list right now in the future?
No, I mean, with me, I can do things like that. So ideally for the rest of this year, you have Alaska would be nice. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that's there. I will almost certainly just probably take at least one or two trips where I get into an airplane. Going to Western Canada would be up there as well. I would like to hike Utah's tallest peak, which is called King's Peak. But in order to do that, I need to have people with me because that's like one of those types of experiences. But no, not necessarily. But if people throw ideas out there through pictures or whatever, I'm more than likely going to try to knock that down. You know, in my opinion, the most beautiful part of this country that I have been is actually in Idaho, in central Idaho. It's called the Sawtooth Mountain Range. And I just realized a few days ago, there's a trail there called the Pioneer Cabin, I think it's called. And I'm like, how did I not know about this place? Well, that's a place I'm going to go knock out at some point this year.
Nice. Nice. Well, we definitely want to see some of those future adventures. And even if nothing strange happens, I still like to see, you know, some of the shots and some of the experiences. And I'm sure the audience would like that as well.
Absolutely.
Let's see here. Is there anywhere that people can reach you, or is there, do you have a link or anything like that that we can share with the audience if they have questions about any of these things, or just want to follow you in general?
Yeah, hopefully at some point in the near future, I'll be able to have a YouTube channel as well. But for the time being, you can find me on Instagram. The name of my channel is called, which makes sense, The Cowboy from the Desert. That's just a place that you can direct message me for questions or content or whatever. But it's a place that I just go and I share just pictures of all these types of places. These pictures I share are just, I'm in them, or they're just nature by themselves. Not necessarily something crazy or weird or whatever, but that's a good place to kind of get an idea of the types of stuff that I share.
Yeah. Well, awesome. And for the listeners, we will put that link at the bottom of this episode underneath, and then you can catch up with Brett and see what he's exploring. And if you have any questions for him, I mean, he's great about sharing the things he knows to help you get the same types of experiences if you'd like.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, look, we've come to the end of the episode. It was great. And I just want to reach out to everybody and say, just remember that there's a lot of strangeness out there. So keep your eyes, ears, and minds open. And until next time, stay safe.
Thank you for listening to High Strangeness. This was a glance at some of the strange that exists in our reality.